And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba,
they have a show 5 days a week,
but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast.
Go on, Randy, say it.
The podcast.
Big D and Bubba podcast.
Someone lock the door so Randy doesn't run out.
The podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast.
Oh, I'm unprepared today, Big D. I forgot to have a gold. I forgot to have one ready.
Oh.
Dang it.
If I stump you, do I get water perk tickets?
That'll work great. So here we go, kicking off the podcast again this week. And I do want to thank Match.com for being the sponsor. You know, if you're looking for love, the best way to find it nowadays is on your phone, because that's where you are anyway. So finding your special someone is easier. You just download the Match.com mobile app, and then you get your matches sent directly to your phone. And then if you're one of our podcast listeners, yeah, you can get 7 days for free. And again, all you have to do is go to match.com/Bubba to get signed up right there once you get the app, and you'll want to check it out today. 7 days free.
Hey, joining us is special guest Randy Goodman, the original MTV VJ.
no, I think that was Mark Goodman.
Oh, this isn't him?
That was my brother. That was my brother.
Oh, okay. Randy Goodman, who's the chairman and CEO of Sony Music in Nashville, and he is joining us for the first time in the studio and on the podcast. We're glad
first
to have you,
time.
Man.
Welcome.
Well, it's great to be here. I'm excited about this. The whole podcast idea with you guys is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
it's a mashup.
It's fun because we get to talk about whatever we want. Like on the show, we do the show to entertain the listeners. The podcast we do to entertain ourselves. I know it sounds goofy that way, but it's a fun place to go and air some grievances. We'll talk business every now and then. We'll talk about personal stuff that we would never say on the air, you know, that kind of thing. So this is where we can kind of cut loose a little
cool.
bit.
Cool. Well, good. I look forward to it.
And by the way, we are on Facebook Live as well. So just know that we're on video.
All
Hi,
right.
Everybody. All right. Hey, everybody.
There he is. So tell us about, for those who don't know you, what you do.
What exactly is a CEO and chairman?
Well, the chairman, that's a weird title. I don't even know what that really means. What CEO means is chief executive officer. Anyway, I'm responsible ultimately for every aspect of what goes on at Sony Music Nashville, and that houses three imprints, which is Arista, RCA, and Columbia. And those are the three promotion staffs that we have that we drive product through and our records through that houses our artists. But overall, I'm responsible for all the aspects of that. And I have a great team of people. And being a part of Sony, which is a huge global company, is great because it has just this amazing array of assets that we can tap into. So, you know, what I'm doing on a constant basis is really trying to look strategically about where we go, which in this new world that we're in, the new world order that we call it, is it's changing all the time. You know, we're here doing podcasts. We're talking about streaming. It's not just about selling CDs anymore. And now we're back selling vinyl again. It's just interesting.
Who thought that was ever going to be a thing?
Well, I didn't. That's for sure. I mean, when I first started in the business, we were selling vinyl. I remember my very early days at RCA, and we were putting out The big marketing tool for us every week was what color vinyl the single would be that we would send out on Charlie Pride or Waylon or Dolly or Millsap, whoever it was. And so, you know, that's where I got my start, and then have been through all the different configurations, and now in this streaming world, which we're still, you know, figuring all that out.
Now, on the vinyl, the colored vinyl, the like red ones didn't last as long, right? Like, is there, I remember for some reason, like you would get, this is a total radio thing, you would get Q-Burn. When you would get the song ready, you would get a lot of extra static is what we would call it. But Q-Burn would happen to your records. And I noticed on the red ones, especially, that Q-Burn was horrendous. I don't know if maybe it was the way they were formulated or whatever. Do you know what I'm talking about, D?
You didn't play a lot of... Well, you know, at AM 1590, the Christian Voice of the Cumberlands, we didn't have different colored records. We had just the plain old black records.
You weren't as sophisticated as us hillbillies.
Somebody was pretty fancy over there. I remember, you know, when I found out that, well, you know, I guess it's been probably four or five years now that when vinyl kind of really started slowly coming in. I mean, we have a record player in here.
Yeah.
And we play it on the show on Thursdays, and we play like older stuff. Patrick's got a old
record collection now.
But how many? I'm like, everyone says, yeah, it's coming back, and artists are, you know, you guys, labels are putting them out, songs out on, and albums on vinyl. But I'm like, how big is it really?
It's not that big. I mean, it's nominal to the overall thing. I think it's an interesting kind of thing that's come back. I mean, I think for artists who there's maybe a cred aspect, it's cool. You have something on vinyl. I have a 19-year-old daughter, and she's either listening to it on her phone or she's listening to it in her room on vinyl, which is a really kind of interesting dynamic there. But for us, you know, particularly in country music, I mean, I think there are certain artists that you'll do a fairly good business on, but it's so expensive to press, and you know, we don't really sell that.
Is that
many.
Why they're so expensive? Because like I was looking at some vinyl the other day, some new stuff, and it was like $35 for a record.
Well, my son just got me for my birthday the remastered Dark Side of the Moon, and it's on 180 gram vinyl, which we never had that back in the old days. I mean, because it was unaffordable, and so. But that's what's happening now. You've got this market where there are people that have that disposable income, and they're buying it, or you've got kids who that's what they're spending all their money on. But it's still in the greater scheme of things, it's a very nominal business, particularly for us in country.
I often think about that, and I got to tell you, I am a digital dude. Mm-hmm. I like owning stuff in digital that I can keep on all, you know, it's on my phone, it's on my hard drive, on my laptop, it's on everything. I love digital, but I don't know how you guys make a profit off of all of that. And I know it's tough, and it's changed the whole business because physical things are easier to sell to people.
Right.
And I find that people are more willing to steal things that are digital. How do you guys, how does the industry, you know, change with everything that's been going on?
Well, I think that's the big question. I mean, you know, everything, at least in the pop, the hip hop world, it's all really moving into streaming. You're talking about with Kendrick Lamar and Drake and some of these kind of artists, you're talking about billions of streams. And to put that in perspective, what you're talking about per stream, just figure that across all the different platforms, it's about 0.004 cents a stream. So when somebody comes in and says, I've got a million streams, it's like, well, great, we can buy lunch.
Right.
You know, that's about what that means.
Yeah.
And so there's still in country, there's still a physical world that's important. But that continues just to decline. And there's still the digital world that's important, but that continues to decline. But everybody, it all seems to be moving to streaming. And the only way that streaming really makes an impact from a revenue perspective is when you scale it. And to put that into perspective, throughout...
When you're talking billions instead of millions.
Yes, yes. And also to put it in perspective for where we are in country is that country music historically has been a 10% plus, maybe 10 to 15% part of the overall business. So when you aggregate up all the different formats, country has historically been anywhere from 10 to 15% of that overall pie.
Is that big or is that small?
It's what it is. It's kind of always been what it is.
No, but I'm saying like what does that put us? At 15%, does that rank us in the bigger categories or the smaller?
Well, it would rank us probably somewhere in the top 5, I would say.
Okay, and good.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. But what's happening with streaming, the RIAA, which is the Recording Industry Association of America, and that's the trade organization for the record companies. So at the end of the year, they put out, and every quarter they put out, you know, new notifications about what's going on. And the most recent one has our streaming at 6%. Well, that's not 10, that's not 15. And so we are still, and our demographic, for whatever reason, typically are late adopters. When we move to a different configuration, whether it was from vinyl to 8-track to cassette to CD now to streaming, our demographic typically adopts late.
Now, so it's always been that way?
It's always been that way.
Wow.
I mean, even when we're looking at computerization and those kind of things. Now, a lot of that is a lot of our demographic are in what we call county C&D markets, and they're serviced by Walmarts or whatever. But as country music begins to spread and as you've got artists that grow into a broader awareness, you know, then you're going to tap into like a Sam Hunt, for example. It's interesting. We've always historically looked at crossover as being terrestrial, as radio crossover from country to top 40 or hot AC or AC or whatever it is. And that's happening now primarily in the streaming world, because you're getting into playlists that are broader than what you've historically been in, whether it's, you know, a country playlist. Now all of a sudden you've got artists that are moving into different playlists, like our Miranda Lambert's new song, Tin Man. It's being pulled into these different kind of playlists. And so that's another part of how all this is going to grow.
So playlists are kind of like the radio formats of, you know, the last 50 years now.
Like the aggregated playlists. Is that what you're talking
about?
Yeah,
and
like,
so what happens is they'll put what's called an editor will create a playlist, and they'll put, let's say, the new Kane Brown in there. And what that'll get...
Are you talking like on Spotify? I get like the Discover Weekly, and it's tailored for me, and it's usually wrong because half the stuff I play is things that I'm playing in here for us, so I'll end up with a bunch of Big D's music or whatever.
Weird stuff. Yeah.
So it's, and I'll end up with like a bunch of Pink Panther themes and things like that.
Because
that pop
we use
up
it
there.
We use it in the studio.
If we need a background
to pull up old TV themes or movie themes, and so it thinks that's what Bubba wants.
So
to
that's what
to
it believes that that's what I want. And I'm like,
somewhere in their office for them, for Spotify, they're like, man, this is we have one user.
That's one guy.
One
he is
user.
Weird.
This
so
one dude
Pink
is crazy.
Panther soundtrack. Yeah. Well, you know, there's certain, like a hot country playlist. And so, and then there's a wild country playlist. And so they'll put different songs into those playlists. Now, what you want is you want people then to go through that playlist. They'll punch into that, hear what's new. But the real win in all that is when they drag that song out of that playlist and put it into their own. So when you would drag that song out of, let's say, the Wild Country playlist, and you drag it into your own Pink Panther-centric playlist, then that's when you begin to grow the consumption from streaming. That's when it grows into that's when it kind of spreads in a viral kind of way. And that happens on the Apple streaming. That happens on Amazon streaming as well. And so that's really where you want streaming to drive into. And that's a part of this whole growth thing. And a part of it is still trying to figure out how do you work with each one of these streaming services to maximize it. Because Spotify obviously has the largest number of users, but many of those users are on the free tier. Then you've got Apple, which has got a significant amount, not as many as Spotify, but all of them are premium.
Yeah.
And then you've got Amazon, which is really interesting. If you look at the Amazon top 50 streaming, they're probably 25%, if not more. Well, 25 out of the 50 are country, which you would never find that in Spotify or Apple. So you've got Spotify is the biggest. You got Apple is second. But when you look at an Amazon service, and I think a part of this is because of Amazon Prime and the female demographic that super serves, which is our core demographic at country as well. That's why they over-index, if you will, for country streaming out of Amazon, because their demographic is so core or so germane, if you will, to what our demographic
is. Is that why people do better? Like I find that usually on the singing contests and all that, country always does strong. Is that kind of the same reason you're going with that?
I think so. I think because it's that when you look at the
court, on The Voice and American Idol and all that stuff.
Well, I mean, you're looking at it's probably middle America that's really into that. That's our core demographic. It's not so much Los Angeles and New York demographics. It's you know, the flyover states, if you will. And that's where people are really into those kind of programs. And I think that they support that kind of music because it appeals to them. It has a broader appeal to them than if it's just a straight up, let's say, pop or hip hop kind of thing. And I think that's why those shows do really well from that perspective, and those artists do.
It's amazing the things you have to think about that other than let's find really good singers and let's try to get their songs out there, but it's so much that goes into
And
doing it, you know.
I would also think nowadays looks would be much more important than they ever were. Like, you know, singers have always been pretty and they've always had a little something on the rest of us. But now I think because visual is such a big part of it, And it, even more so than in the MTV heydays and all that, I would think being attractive is such a bonus now. You can't, it's really hard to be, and I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but it's hard to be a regular looking dude like a Chris Stapleton and break through. He surprised a lot of people. I really believe
look
that.
Look at Luke Combs. Yeah. Luke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's what I was thinking about, because I think you're exactly right. And I think I even play into that. You know, you know, we're in a visual world as well. And people are looking at this, and this is where they're getting their visual content from. And so, yeah, we all know that if you see somebody attractive, you're kind of drawn to that. It was funny. I was at some showcases this weekend in Key West and went into this huge club down there, and Luke Combs was playing. And it was more of a writer's kind of thing, so it was Luke in there. And we just celebrated a number one single with him and getting ready to drop his first album. And so Luke was up there with his guitar player, and it was this bar, and it was packed, and it was rowdy, and people were drinking. And and Luke comes in, and it was funny. He said, I have to say, I'm walking in, and he said, every guy that was over 200 pounds and had a beard was stopping me saying, hey, man, people think I look just like you. And I thought to myself, you know, and I thought, that is so amazing, because – and I think that's one of the appeal to him, and maybe even a Chris Stapleton, because they're the antithesis of everything.
The everyman. The everyman.
That's, it's the everyman. It's exactly what it is, and I think that's where people are drawn to Luke, because he gets up there, and you go, yeah, man, that's me. I don't have to look like whoever else. I don't have to look like this person or that person. And I think that a lot of times, too, the music that he's doing right now is striking a chord because he's so authentic to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember before we even signed Luke Combs, I heard of Luke Combs from my son who was at the University of Tennessee. He was like, Dad, have you heard of this guy named Luke Combs? I said, no. And he goes, I just saw him at this club, and you got to check this guy out. And then
did you listen or did you just move on?
Well, you know, it was one of those things where I heard it and he called me and he texted me, and then you go into the office. And then that same week, one of our regional promotion guys had just been out on the road, and he walks up to me and he goes, dude, Luke Combs, have you heard of this guy? I goes, that's crazy. I just heard of that from my son.
Almost the exact same thing happened to me. I have a friend who goes to Southeastern in Hammond, Louisiana, and she kept telling me, she's like, you got to check out this guy, Luke Combs. And, you know, people tell me stuff like that all the time and just go, yeah, okay, I'll get to that. And then I had another friend who works in Chicago. And was at a Luke Combs concert, and it was sold out. And I went, wait, Chicago, Hammond, Louisiana, we got people who are, I should check this guy out.
That's the kind of same thing. We saw it like with Kane Brown. There's you see that little groundswell that happens a lot. Well, Corey Smith is one. I thought he was going to blow up, man. Like, I love Corey Smith, and he's one of those guys that you heard a lot of all over. And it usually starts on campuses. And you go, oh, yeah, this is going to blow up. And for some reason, he hasn't been able to make that leap. However, every album he puts out, I go, God, this one's better than the last.
Do you know what I tell you? With Corey specifically, I almost, and I would never want him to hear this, so thank God no one listens. I kind of like it when it's
when he's not as big.
Yeah, I like it where he's kind of that guy. Because
it's your own thing?
Yeah. Well, it's like...
It's your secret?
It's not so... A little bit of that, but also more of the fact that I feel that he is doing his thing his way, yeah, and he doesn't need anyone else, and he's out there making it, and I like it.
And he's selling out 5,000 and 6,000 seat venues.
Yeah.
With no record label.
Oh, so you guys are almost talking like the Aaron Watson thing. Like right now, Aaron Watson's selling very well. I think he's doing really good.
And that he's kind of stuff been is rare. I mean, those rare guys are, you know, are one in a million.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. There is this whole, you know, what's called the DIY kind of element to that. And I'll never forget, and because all this stuff makes me think of, and this is kind of the interesting thing about country music right now, because it's never been this. I mean, when I first started at RCA back in the 80s, you would come in and you would have someone would go in and lay down the tracks, and then Charlie Pride or whoever else would come in and sing on them, and you'd ship that to radio, and that's really how it worked. And if you had a hit, then you could tour. And what's happening now really reminds me a lot of what was happening when I was at RCA and I was in New York and got to be there when we signed Dave Matthews Band. And that's what that whole kind of indie rock pre-jam band thing was. It was these guys out there on the road, and they were doing it DIY. And Dave Matthews, his social media was encouraging people to record his shows on cassette and send the cassettes out to their friends. I mean, he basically said, record my show and send it to your friends. And he created this kind of whole social media movement with the cassette. And I know when we finally got involved with him, he was talking to us about, well, I don't really know why do we need to sign with a major label? And I'll never forget this as long as I live. It's classic. Joe Galani, he had hired me at RCA, and he moved me to New York when he went up there. And Joe said, how much money did you make this last year, all you guys? And they said the number. And Joe wrote the number down. And then he added a comma and three more zeros. And he said, that's why you signed with a major record company. And I was like, oh, my God, that's brilliant.
Have you used that? Have you?
I haven't used it, like written it down like that. But it was one of those things where, you know, that's the point is that we have talked to a lot of those artists. And Luke Combs was one of them. Luke was over there, and he was on an independent, and he was doing really, really good business. And even Kane, you know, Kane Brown was this whole social media thing. I mean, his Facebook, we call it Kane Radio, because he can drive so much impact. And every time he has a call to action, man, they do it. They do it. Those fans do it. And so a lot of those artists, not unlike Dave Matthews in the 90s, look at that with a little bit of reticence going, well, am I going to lose who I am? To Corey's point, am I going to lose my cred? Am I going to lose that audience that I have? And my answer to that, if I'm trying to sign something, is, well, no, because I don't want to change you, because I'm attracted to you because of what you're doing in the marketplace right now. What I want to do is come alongside of you, be a venture person, if you will, bring some fresh capital to help you, and bring the assets and the manpower resources that we can bring to blow this thing up so that I can .000.
Do you guys remember when Pat Green signed, and he signed with a major? And it was weird because his fans kind of turned on him. For a short while there, they were mad. They're like, wait, why are you?
But you know, because it used to be different. So it used, you know, what you just said, that wasn't the major label way necessarily.
Right. It wasn't
10 years ago. You know, it was like you're doing a great job, and now we're going to bring you over here. We're going to change your image and tweak your sound, and you got to record these songs. You know, that scene in that thing you do where they go, "We want to record our songs." He goes, "No, here's a list. Pick 10 of these songs." Right. You know, and it was how it was seen.
And that's the cool thing about the DIY thing. It's very rare anymore that a new artist comes into us that doesn't have an agency, is not out already touring or playing, does not have music up on probably another format, whether it's Sirius or another streaming platform. I mean, it's very rare that that kind of development hasn't already taken place. And so what's cool about it is they come to us with a real clear sense of who they are as an artist. And so therefore, it's our decision is, can I buy into that and help you grow that as it is? Because I don't want to change it because it's working. Like with Kane, it's a matter of saying, how do we grow this into being bigger? Because what you're doing is working. Or Luke Combs is that way.
Is it changing or refining? I don't know if the word is better as change or refine.
It's probably a better word. You're probably right. I mean, and to me, it's like record companies. I'd always looked at us as, like in the broader business world, we're venture capitalists. We come in and we find these small businesses that we like, and we say, we're going to invest money in your business.
I've never heard it put this way, but that's genius.
And we're going to bring alongside our expertise, and we're going to help you grow your company. And that's
like Shark Tank.
Yeah, well, you're right.
It used to be you needed a record label to have enough money to record good music. But like, even now, especially now, did you change the Luke Combs single at all? Did you even remaster it, or just it was already out there and you started promoting it to radio?
Yeah, we basically
were playing it. We had Luke in the studio probably 3 months before you guys signed him.
No, we didn't change a thing. We just basically came up alongside him. And I think the only thing that we changed or didn't change with Luke, and again, that's back to your point about refinement. To me, it's more of not change, but it's the collaboration. It's again, it's the venture capitalist coming into this small company and saying, you're making this great water. That's a great idea. Here's what we can do for you. We can invest in this. We can bring our skills to bear, and we'll get this in Walmart. We'll get this in China. We'll get this globally. And I think that's what record companies really do for artists. And so like with Luke, We start again. The cool thing about it was it wasn't the classic A&R kind of way. It came up through the promotion guys and through people calling, and we got interested. And we basically took that record and we said, we love what you're doing. We love this. We're just going to take it, and we're going to bring all of our assets to it so that we can take it to number one. Because without us, I don't think Luke Combs could have taken that record in 24 weeks to number one. The big thing, though, that we did from a collaborative perspective was we sat down, because then Luke, like all new artists, are going, I got to get music out, because that's what he's been doing, is feeding the beast. And when we come alongside, we go, here's what we got to do. You got to give us time to grow this record.
Slow it down a bit.
Yeah, take this record number one, get critical mass, get that 45 million audience aware of you, and then we drop the record, and then you've got the potential to blow it up, and then you create momentum. And so that's a dialogue, and that's a collaborative thing that
I bet that's hard to do, to break them of the...
It is.
You know, the keep throwing it out there. It's almost like a shotgun. Dee and I talk about this for radio bits and ideas and things. Not everything's going to work, so you just throw so much stuff out there, and then something's going to hit. Something is going to resonate with someone, and that's
right.
Kind of the thing that these, I guess, developing artists do. And then you guys go, okay, now it's time to pull back and pull the shotgun back. Let's pull out the sniper rifle, and let's really take our time and put this out exactly where we want it to be and how we want it.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to do a dual plug for Randy and for us. Luke Combs' album does come out on June the 2nd, and he will be in studio with Big D and Bubba that day to celebrate the
release.
That's
great.
Awesome.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. Thank you very much.
I really like Luke a lot.
I like his
personality. I like his music.
I like the fact that he has to take a dip out to sing.
I mean, yes.
There's a lot
it's
going
the best.
On there.
He's like, all right, we're going to sing.
That's right. That's
all
right.
We're ready now, guys.
That's right. I got onto him the other night. He had that in there, and I said, all right, Luke, the dad in me is coming out, and you know that dipping is one of the worst things you could do for your vocal cords, and I want you to be around. And
is it?
Yeah. I mean, and I know that just because one of the things that we do with our new artists, because, you know, we sign them, and they're out already touring and singing, and then we take them around to radio, and they're talking all day, and then they're having dinners, and then they're getting up the next morning and singing at ungodly hours. And so we take them over here to the Vanderbilt Voice Clinic, and we do like a baseline
mapping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they go through this whole thing, and they sit there and they go, alcohol in moderation, you got to hydrate, and you got to stay away from tobacco, because that dripping down into the vocal cords over the years can really have an impact on it. And so
I always thought that was a wives' tale. That's interesting to know that you actually have the science on it.
Yeah, we have the science on it. And but nobody pays attention to it, because, you know, when you're 23, 24 years old, you're not going to die anytime soon. You don't think so.
When I was 23 years old, I weighed 150 pounds less than this. People told me cheeseburgers in moderation.
Right. But
you know how it is. You don't believe it.
Yeah. But, you know, going back to that thing you were talking about, is probably the artist that was the hardest to do that with was Kane, because he came completely out of – he wasn't even touring. You know, he wasn't out there like Luke. He came off the internet.
Yeah.
And his whole thing was – every time I put something up, there's a reaction. And that became a drug. That became addictive and then when he started putting those things.
35 more subscribers in the last hour.
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, it's the home shopping network, you know, like me now, let's send this, let's share this, let's do that. And so a part of that was with him is to say, okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to take this to radio, and radio works slower. It's not as immediate. And for a lot of these young artists, man, that's a very, very tough thing for them to understand. And so a part of what we've had to do as well, again, that notion of collaboration, is to say, okay, the paradigms are shifting. How do we change with that? How do we moderate this a bit and say, okay, let's lean towards you, Kane, but you lean towards us, and let's find what works, and let's try some different things. And to me, even though the business is really in a difficult situation right now, because our revenues aren't what they were, and because we're waiting to scale and we haven't yet, and there is the whole piracy thing that just continues, and it's so ubiquitous that we don't even talk about it anymore. But the exciting thing about all that is it gives us an opportunity in a lot of ways just to rewrite how we've done things in the past. There's so many new ways and new paths to try things. From Kane is different from Luke, and Luke is different from Maren, and Maren is different from Miranda, and they're all very unique, and it allows us to find unique paths to go down for each one of them.
Just looking at your list of artists, Kenny, Luke Combs, Tyler Farr, Maren Morris, Kane Brown, Miranda, Old Dominion, Jake, Chris Young, Cam, Tim, Brad, Faith. I mean, you've got a lot of people that you're trying to keep up with.
Anytime you have that many people with first names, you know, you have one name people. That means
that's
they're
pretty
big.
Good.
That is good. I didn't even think about that. You're
so
right.
So let's say, Randy, all of your artists happen to call at the exact same time, and all those lines are on hold. Who are you picking up first?
Oh, my God. Now you really put me on the spot. That's a great question.
Please, for love of God, don't answer that question.
Alphabetical order.
Alphabetical order. Well, you know, I mean, a part of it is the interesting thing about it, everyone is, there's always a cycle. You know, Luke is in the launch cycle. He's in that single one, drive to the album, pick it, go into single two. And so that's a unique cycle. And so what we're talking to Luke and his management about are unique things. And then with Chris Young, we just dropped the new single, and we're just getting into the single one launch cycle. And
which
then,
I like. And by the way, I changed your edit on it. I had to add something on this.
I'm not joking.
Yes.
We spent probably 30 minutes talking about 2 seconds of that song.
Of audio. Yeah. And we're not the only one. So here's some behind the scenes.
I love that. What did you do?
Well, no, here's the problem. Here's some behind the scenes of how it works. I get the singles, I pick the music, and I put everything in the system. So, oh, great, new Chris Young single. I send it to Carson, who physically loads it into our system. She loaded it 3 times, thinking that something was wrong with the file, because it cuts off very hard at the end.
Oh, yeah.
So then she's going, something's wrong with the file, I can't get it right. So I am on the site that we get this music from going, their file must be messed up. It's not right. It's doing it on the site. So then I'm literally like calling my friends at the record label going, can you send me a copy of this Chris Young song that's not messed up? And they send me another one and they go,
it's messed up.
Oh, no, that's on purpose. And I went, well, that's just stupid. And also we wasted 45 minutes trying to figure out why the file was messed up.
Yeah.
And then Bubba actually adjusted the
file. Yeah, I don't know if I'm supposed to have told you that, but yeah, I did. I changed the end of it, and I'm trying to get it ready here.
Just because it bothered us personally.
As radio people, it sounded like we had hit the button.
Because it sounds like we screwed up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
You know how it ends where it sounds like it's cut off?
Yeah, right.
Okay, and here's what I did. I took some of the effect at the beginning, that weird little thing that sounds cool, the production part.
Right.
I added that and some echo, and it just gives it a different ending here. Hold on. And about.
Light a candle. Turn all the lights down low.
So it at least sounds like it ended on purpose.
Yes.
So, I get it. No, that's really cool.
It was driving us nuts.
Driving us completely crazy.
No one would have ever cared.
Such a great song. I didn't want anything to ever bug me about it. Isn't that the dumbest thing you've ever heard?
No. In fact, I'm sitting here, I'm hearing you guys talk about that, and I love that because to me, with everything else that you guys have got going on and what you're trying to do, that you take the time to say, hey, there's something about this from a programming of element that doesn't sit with us. And I love the fact that you took 45 minutes to figure it out and to do something.
Mostly because we thought it was wrong. We don't like this, let's change it.
I guarantee you, over the next several weeks, you'll hear something back from it going,
I bet you will.
Hey, you'll hear radio people calling.
Do you have a version with the end that's not cut off?
Do you have a version where it doesn't cut off at the end?
But you know, we have that. That's the other interesting thing. That's another interesting dynamic about music and the relationship we have with radio is that a lot of times you guys will call in, and it may not be a bunch of people, but they'll call in and they'll say, this doesn't work for us in this market, or can we do this or can we do that? And I just, again, I like that. I think it's very cool that you guys took the time and you cared and you did that. And then I'm sitting there listening to this in my headphones and you just go, God, what a great singer that guy is.
That song is really good, isn't it?
It's very, very cool. And he brought it in and he was like going, do you think I'm going too far here? And I just said, you know, hey, this is going to be Chris Young's sixth album, you know, which is amazing to me. And I just said, I think that, you know, it's one of those things, you either you're standing still or you're growing or you're dying, you're adopt or die kind of thing. And he really took that to heart. And the rest of the record is just, you know, I think at that same level, and it's really, really exciting. So I'm glad to hear you guys are.
Well, he's one of those guys. I mean, what do you have, three number ones off that last record?
Yeah,
And just, I mean, you know, it's like right there waiting to just explode to the next level.
Yeah, it's like we call it graduation day for Chris. And I think the last album, we did graduate him to a certain degree. But still, I think there's so much more headroom for him just because he's such an amazing singer. And we're seeing it right now. I just saw him. Kane and he are opening on the Jason Aldean tour. And last weekend, I was up to see them in, where did I go? I can't even remember. Chicago, yeah.
Isn't that great? When you travel so much, yeah, you don't even know where you are.
I don't even know where I am.
Where am I?
Where am I? But it was Kane and Chris and Jason Aldean. And it was an incredible show. And the cool thing was I was talking to Jason's manager because, again, going back to Kane and that social media thing and what's driving people in, he was saying, you guys don't have a hit at radio yet with Kane, and yet this facility is probably 70% filled for the first artist. And he said that never, ever happens. Mm-hmm. And then by the time Chris hits the stage, and so for someone like Jason, it's a great package because by the time Jason gets on, you know, this crowd's, they've been there and they're amped up and it's ready to go.
They're frothy. So.
They're frothy. They're frothy indeed.
Frothy sounds wrong.
Frothy is a good
frothy
word.
Frothy a little bit.
You people in your, they were trying to tell me to stop saying moist because people don't like it. I'm like, I don't care if people don't like it. It's a great, when I think moist, I think cake. And that is a good thing. I want moist cake.
I've heard that moist is a word that makes people uncomfortable, but I'm like you. It's like a, it's a very descriptive term for some important things.
Look at Carson's face. She's like,
hey, Carson, how are you?
I'm glad I walked in.
Boy, you walked in just in the right moment, didn't you?
You know who this is? This is Randy Goodman, one of the original VJs on MTV.
Yes.
it's been our running gag
joke
here.
I'm not sure.
I did.
I'm not sure a lot of people are going
to
get that.
You got to be of
joke.
A certain age to get that one. Yeah. Of a certain age. Unfortunately, I'm of that certain age. So.
Hey, you had a long relationship, and I guess you still kind of do, with Rascal Flatts.
Yes.
And we love those guys. They were just in not too
last
long ago.
Week.
Yeah. And it's funny, I told them that when they first came in, they came in and visited us. But the very first single, right, Patrick?
Oh,
it was
yeah.
the very
oh,
first
one. It was before. There was one of those radio tours before
Praying for
before
Daylight.
Before they look, even had a single out.
Well, we met them whenever they were playing, when two of them were playing in the band for Shelley Wright
oh, that's
back
right.
in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And like
it was
we just
Joe
hung
Don
out,
and,
yeah,
and Jay.
And Jay.
Yeah.
And we just hung out smoking cigars with those guys, and then they ended up turning into a, you know, superstars.
Right, right.
I just told them, I said, I'm just so glad that I now know the difference between you guys and Yankee Gray. And they were like, oh my gosh, what happened to Yankee Gray? I go, I don't know, man. I don't remember. But I remember he's like, because it was like Rascal Flatts, Yankee Gray. I think there was
Little Big Town. Was it in that same?
No, not at the same time.
Then,
really
then,
Rascal
then,
Flatts and Yankee Gray were the bands, I guess, that came out almost at the exact same time. Little Big Town was later.
Maybe it was a year later, but it
no,
was in
little,
that same
no.
time because we were, yeah.
Let's go to the expert. Randy, do you remember?
Well, you know, I that was when I was at Lyric Street running. That Lyric Street was a part of the Disney company. I started that company for them. And in fact, the first new artist that we had that came out of Lyric Street, first album did 2 million copies, was a group, the trio of girls called Shadazy.
Right.
And
we came
with them first, and that album blew up. And then what was interesting, Dan Huff, who was producing Shadazy for us, he said he was very good friends with Mark Bright, who he, along with a guy named Mark Williams, was developing Rascal Flatts. And he said, hey, you need to call Mark. And I'd known Mark back from my days at RCA when he was doing some things for Arista. And that's when Rascal Flatts came in and played for us. And they saw what we were doing with Shadazy, and it was a little bit, you know, pushing the envelope. And we were Disney and whatever synergy that might mean. And so Rascal Flatts came in and played for us, and it was like, wow, you know, these are, I mean, it was amazing because, you know, Gary LaVox just opens his mouth and they had those songs. And again, that's another one where they had the demos, and there was four of those songs that were in really strong demo form. Praying for Daylight was one of them. And a couple of those early singles. And so, yeah, it was just one of those things where it was just like, just go make the record and get started. And they were such, you know, as you guys know, because you just saw them again. I mean, they could make a comedy record. I told them when we were out on that first road trip, I remember I just said, man, if the record thing doesn't work out, we need to do a comedy thing with you guys because they're just crazy. They're a lot of fun.
Well, I remember back then.
And by the way, Patrick, you were right.
I was right.
Little Big Town and Rascal Flatts, same time. You're right.
Here's what happened with Little Big Town. They didn't really get any traction until they finally got over to Capitol, which was several years afterwards.
Yeah.
And
they had three albums out before
they
that.
They did.
And it was just like they had one big hit.
Yeah, I don't even remember them out at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you remember the first time they came in though.
Oh, yeah.
Because the very first time they came in, Dee and Jimmy went to college together and we had no idea. Like it was one of those where this is what would happen. I was gonna say the same thing about Rascal Flatts, is that it's about 99, 2000. That's how long I've been working with these guys. And back then, the only artists who would come in were brand new, never heard of artists.
Right.
Okay. And so it would always be like, all right, with these guys, there's a new act. They're on Lyric Street. Okay. We go get them and we don't know who they are. And they come in and they play. Well, Rascal Flatts was the first time I remember going, oh my God, who are these guys?
While You Love Me song off the first album. Yes. And I was like, holy crud, this is going to be huge.
And then when Little Big Town came in, it was the same thing. It was like, this is a new group. It's Little Big Town. It's a stupid name. And then we're going to bring them in, and they're going to sing, okay, man, we'll see how it goes. And they walk in, and the guy goes, Derek? D looks up and goes, Jimmy? I'm like, whoa, do y'all know each other? How does that even happen? They had gone to college together.
That's still
one of my favorite things I've ever seen is this kind of walking in the studio.
Do you know Jimmy? Jimmy is a flamer. I don't know if you knew that. He's a flamer and I'm a flamer. We both went to Lee College.
And so is Jay DeMarcus.
Jay DeMarcus
is a flamer.
Jay DeMarcus is a flamer.
You guys were all there at the same time.
We're all there at the same time. And Jimmy and I always talk about it. We want to go and put a Lee flame license plate in the front of his car at night when he doesn't know. And just he goes, dude, he won't know for 4 days at least that it's even on there.
There's a Lee license plate on that. I didn't know that. I didn't know that he went to Lee. But, yeah, I knew, you know, Jay went there as well. So, yeah.
Small world, man.
Small world, indeed.
We actually had an imp. It's the best story. It's a small Christian college, private college.
Yeah.
And a liberal arts.
Right.
And we didn't have a football team, and you know, we had a basketball team and a softball team. And but at basketball games, our mascot was this girl who would get in an ember outfit, a big giant ember suit, like a flame.
An ember suit.
And did it look like one of those pencils that you spin and the hair goes up?
The bottom part kind of looked like an orange or reddish like water drop, and it went up and then it kind of flared off into these flame looking things and would run up and down the court. And we used to go, you know, I forget, flame on or something. Burn on or something.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Just the best.
I'm Googling. I can't find any images of that.
Oh, really?
But I will one day.
Maybe they've upgraded to like the Hunger Games. Now that the girl was on fire on the dress.
Right,
yeah,
right,
you know?
That's right. That's
get
right.
some technology happening.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, how do you, because it's something that I personally struggle with, is hearing music that I go, wow, this is a country song. And I hear it and I go, how is this a country song? But it works and we play it. But personally, I go,
people love it.
If I, you know, men especially, we put things in containers in our brain.
Boy, that's the truth.
And I move things around into, hey, okay, this is my rap stuff. This is my 80s stuff. It's my country. This is my relaxed, older country. And some of the stuff, I don't know where to put it.
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting thing, and in terms of what I do in particular with the A&R folks, and when you're listening to stuff, I mean, I remember the first time. I mean, I was in my third day at Sony, and you know, it's just drinking out of the proverbial fire hose. I don't even know where the bathroom is, but you know, the fire, it was a hose water, but it was at an extreme volume, and and I remember Jim Catino came in, and then it was just, I just, it was like this stuff was swirling around. And he said, hey, I know it's crazy and busy. He said, but we want you to hear something that we've been really excited about. And we just couldn't get any traction on, and it's probably going to go somewhere else. But I just wanted you to hear it because I wanted you to hear what we're thinking from an A&R perspective. And it was kind of like, great, come in. Let's play some music. That's what I need. And it was Maren Morris. And the first song was a song called Sugar that's on this album. And, you know, you put it on, you're going, God, what is this? This is cool. This is fresh in her voice. And you could hear the Texas in her voice, but then you're hearing this song, Sugar, and you're going, and then it just dawned on me. It's like, well, this isn't any different than what Florida Georgia Line is doing as guys, or any different than what some of these other guys are doing that are bringing more of a hip-hoppy, sing-songy kind of edgy thing. But we're not used to hearing it from girls, because mm-hmm. girls are typically singing more contemporary-leaning, more pop-leaning, big kind of songs. And so I got really excited about it from that. And then, of course, there was I Could Use a Love Song and some of these other amazing performances that I think are more germane to our format. But it was one of those things where, to your point, you know, what happened with Maren, and again, you go see her live show, and you've got both young men and young women, but primarily a lot of young women there that don't maybe categorize or silo up what they're listening to. But yeah, mm-hmm. it is an interesting.
That's a really good point, because I already have a benchmark of what I put that box in.
Right.
And they don't.
Right. Right. And so like with Maren, you're sitting there going, it's weird. I mean, I even go back to with Shadazy. I remember that was so different and contemporary leaning at that point in time. That whole idea, Little Goodbyes. And I remember saying to the guy who was head of A&R at the time, he said, what do you think about this? I said, this is either going to be really big, or it's gonna never have existed. You know, it's going to be just going to come and go. And some of those happen sometimes. And that's a part of, I guess, what we do as record companies as well. I mean, I always liken it to, if we can get a batting average like a big time, you know, all-star major league baseball player, you know, if we can hit a third of the records that we put out, or, you know, or sure. even more than that, then you're doing really, really well.
You're in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. But a part of it is you're always trying stuff because you don't know where people are going. And that's the cool thing about Luke, because you hear Luke, and Luke is so much more country, and there's a couple of other things that are out there that are happening like that right now. And that's what I've always loved about our format, is that because it's a singular format, it's just country radio, but it's this really, really broad thing. I mean, from a Chris Stapleton to a Chris Young to a Maren to a Thomas Rhett to a Florida Georgia Line to it's a really, really broad thing.
Yeah.
It's a constant argument about it, because it's always been that way, and people don't realize.
Right.
I mean, there were people complaining about Kenny Rogers, and then I know people who were singers and producers in the late 80s who say the same thing about Alabama.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Alabama is nothing but a pop act.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, no, Alabama is about as country as it gets now. But
a lot of it is
about Hank Williams.
Right,
and
they complained about
Eddie Arnold
yeah. and Jim Reeves and all of them. But I think so much of it is just, you know, it's context. Because, you know, when I go to New York and we'll have an A&R meeting, we'll play our music up against, you know, a Beyonce or a Harry Styles or whatever, a Chainsmokers or whatever else is going on.
Do you have to sit in meetings where they compare, like, okay, here's the new stuff we have from this one, this one, this one?
Well, you'll sit in meetings, and basically what you do is you'll show your wares. Here's what we've got. Here's what we're excited about. And the cool thing about it is, when you're sitting in that meeting with a bunch of other A&R guys or label heads, they all are very appreciative of what's going on, and they're all music fans enough where they see the validity in a Luke Combs. And even if they don't see the validity in it, they see the reaction of it on the format. Or like a Kane, there's a song off his album called Learning that he wrote. And it's just this powerful autobiographical song. And it's so vulnerable. And I remember one of the first time I played that for these guys in New York, they were taken off guard. They're just like going, That's so amazingly vulnerable for something that they wouldn't have thought that would be in our format. Now, that hasn't been a single yet, and it may never be a single, but it's one of those things where I think that what they always appreciate about our music And this has been true from the very beginning of my life in Nashville and working in country music, is they always appreciate the element that it is at the core a song. It's a story. It's a, you know, and a lot of what they get into is so track oriented. It's this groove track with some kind of almost nonsensical thing on top of it. And I think for most of those guys and girls, they really, really appreciate at the core great songs. And so when we play our music, that's what they're experiencing and that's what they're hearing.
Do you see a point ever where the song words, the lyrics go away in country? Or do you see it as always being the thing that drives country music in general? Because like Maren said, it's the story. It doesn't matter about the sound. I read the article she had. Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting. I agreed with her on about 99% of it. Mm-hmm. But there was a couple things. I don't know. I do think country is a sound. And I don't know how to categorize it. I don't know if it's a sound or a feel or what. But there is definitely something that you know when you hear a country song. And I'm just wondering if we're ever going to abandon the thing that got us to where we are. And that's the lyrics, the stories. Like, I just, there's something about a country song that tells a story, and it's like a mini movie in 3.5 minutes, and it's fantastic.
I mean, I pray to God that that never happens. And I think, you know, we were talking about people like Eddie Arnold and Jim Reeves, and you go back through the history of so many. I mean, it's always been about telling stories, the people that you go and see week in and week out on the Opry, all their great breakthrough songs were these great stories. I think that will always be at the very core of what we're about.
Do you think that's what defines country, is the lyrical content?
Yeah, I do, more than anything. I think more than even the sonics of it, because even though when we sit in our world and we hear something, we go, wow, is that pushing the sonics? But then if you step over and switch over to, let's say, The River, which is a hot AC station, and you start hearing what they're playing, you're going, okay, we're nowhere near where those guys are in terms of what's going on. But in our own world, sometimes we hear that sonic envelope maybe being pushed beyond what we may be comfortable with, and I am as well. And so a lot of times I'm asking some of those younger women that are in the audience, I'm saying, that are really more, they're more in the demo obviously than I am, and they're P1s, and I'm saying, what do you think about that? And they're talking about the song. I love what that song is saying. They don't say to me, I think that sonic is being pushed, that envelope is way, way out there. None of them ever say that to me. They're talking about the song. That's a great song. That's a story.
So
that
basically,
me.
Is it mainly just dudes that have a problem?
I think us as dudes.
Yes, I will. Yeah. I will be able to quantify that for you.
Yeah.
Because all my life, I have gone over every genre, and I might wear the Garth Brooks shirt to school one day, but then I had like an Anthrax t-shirt on, the New Kids on the Block or something. And it was never a girl who questioned me. It was always the guy, you can't like all that music. Why can not? I not like it? And it's part of it, to your point about women listening to it. We are listening to lyrics, and that's our story. That's our life. Even if it's a dude singing from a guy's perspective, maybe that's how we hope a guy feels about us. Like, we're listening. Like, we're taking it in.
I use the same Waylon Jennings quote all the time. It's carved in stone on the outside of the Country Music Hall of Fame. It says, country music is not a banjo or a guitar or a lyric or a sound. It is a feeling.
Right.
And, you know.
And that's conveyed. Feeling is conveyed by story, you know. Yeah. And it's like, that's why certain movies move us, because the stories are so strong. But, yeah, It's an interesting thing, but I do think that country music, that will always be what's germane to what our format really is.
Is Jermaine the second Jackson?
No, that was Tito.
Yeah, no, I thought Tito, which one was Tito? Then Jermaine.
But then Tito went off and started a vodka company, and then Jermaine and Dupree, and man, I don't even.
I have one question I really want to ask, and I'm going to.
You've been saving this towards the end,
yeah,
haven't you?
Yeah, and it exists on the podcast, so I'm not.
He's
like going to
wear
calling
me down and then hit me upside the head.
Maybe.
I don't know what he's doing.
It's not that big of a deal, but you were talking about.
No
Maren.
Big deal, but Patrick's a singer, and we want you to hear something.
I've been writing a lot, and I'm wondering if you can help me pitch some songs.
Okay.
Now, we had one of your contemporaries on the podcast last year, John Esposito, from Warner Brothers.
Right.
And we asked him, okay, you're going to tell us about all the artists you've signed and how much you love them. who is somebody you missed that you could have signed and didn't, or you there was a bidding war and you lost, and you
might
regret.
Kick yourself now.
Yeah, and he said, "Oh, my biggest regret in all my time at Warner, right now as I'm sitting here, is that we didn't get Maren Morris." Mm. So I don't know if you know that, if he's ever said that to you, or
he's never said that to me. But I knew that when Jim Cotino brought that in and played it for me, and I said, "I'm in," and he goes, "Well, I think she's going to go to Warner Brothers." Mm-hmm. And my first question was, "Well, has she gone?"
Right.
And they said no. And I said, "Then let's go get it."
Well, let me ask you the same question.
Luke Bryan.
are you serious?
I'm serious.
When did you have an opportunity? Was it at Lyric Street?
Lyric Street Records. Wow. Carrie Edwards, who I'd known back from my Arista days. And, you know, and even Dungan had already heard him at Universal.
That's just for everyone that's not in the industry. That's where he eventually
went. Mike Dungan, yeah.
With Mike Dungan.
Yeah. Okay. And so even, you know, Mike had heard it. And we had gone to see it. And again, that was in that really, I mean, Luke was one of those pioneers of the, I'm blowing this thing up live. And you go down to Athens, you go down to Georgia, you see him and you're going, but there was an element about Luke that I kept wondering, is this, how long term is this? Is this something is this faddish? Is this for real? What's the depth here? And again, sometimes in my role, in our roles, you know, you sit there and you just overthink it. You mm-hmm. get too stupid about it.
Well, you don't want to make a bunch of missteps. You make missteps, and that could end your career.
You get fired. Yeah. Right. And every commitment that you make means you've got to go and try that, and that costs a lot of money, both in manpower and dollar resources. But yeah, I mean, and it's so funny because, you know, I know Luke. Obviously, he came in and saw us several times, and I've known Carrie Edwards, who's his manager, and I even joke about it now when I just see him. You know, it's always like he goes, "Yeah, you passed on me, brother." And it's like, you know, so then he walks out and plays at a stadium. And it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I passed on him.
Yeah, that guy, hey, everybody here, put the camera on me and put me up on the Jumbotron. But that's that one that you just go. And again, you know, there's these, our city is rife with those stories. I mean, Garth Brooks is probably the ultimate thing where, you know, he came to town and got passed on, came to town and got passed on. And a part of it, too, is, I mean, Taylor Swift had a development deal with Sony when Joe Galani was there. And Joe Galani's considered one of the deans of the record guys. And so, and sometimes it's timing. Sometimes it's a matter of you sign an act to a development deal and it doesn't develop right. But then all of a sudden,
how many Chris Stapleton projects were there in this town that just went nowhere?
Bingo.
And then
all of a sudden, I mean, I'll never forget. I was sitting next to Dungan. My wife and I were sitting next to Jane and Mike Dungan at the CMA Awards. And, you know, and I've known Mike, you know, forever since the 80s and the Stapleton nominations. And then he won. And then that, what I only can describe as a transcendent performance with he and Justin Timberlake on that show. And it was just like, you know, yeah. Like, it was,
I
like,
think that's what blew everybody up. Mm-hmm. And
oh, yeah.
I would think, what was the difference in sales? Like, what was the sales jump?
Oh, it went
in the next 24 hours.
I haven't memorized. They sold 96,000 copies in 6 months from the album release to the night of the CMAs. In 50 hours from the performance of the CMAs to the close of the chart, they sold 155,000 copies.
I remember walking out with Dungan and I was saying, congratulations. And he said, yes, I hope it turns into sales, because he says, I'm so far in the red on this guy that I need something.
Oh, my gosh. And he's basically, they sold, you know, they've sold 2 million records since then.
Which in this environment is crazy. And then they just dropped his new record. And that same album that got driven by the CMA Awards is number 2 this week on the Consumption Country chart.
Being driven by the new album.
Absolutely. So, I mean, and again, that is one of the rarest of stories, because you're right, because here's a guy that you know, what was the name of the band that he was in?
The Johnson Brothers or the Steel Drivers.
The Steel Drivers. Yeah. I mean, he's been around, he's been writing, but he never fit. You know, we're talking about, you know, what fits.
Was going on at the time.
He never fit, and radio never really warmed up to him. But then there's that moment, and I think then what happened was People downloaded it, got the record, and then it became one of those word of mouth things where people were saying, oh my God, I don't know what this is, but you got to hear this. And then people just started buying into it.
We hear stories all the time. I mean, I remember Jeffrey Steele telling us 10 years ago when everything he wrote turned into a number one hit.
Right.
That he didn't change anything. He was writing the same songs 15 years before and nobody was recording them.
You're right.
And then all of a sudden,
it happens.
That was it was just the right songs at the right time.
And that's the thing. You know, it's just sometimes you hear an act and you say, I don't know. I'm not being compelled by that. That doesn't. And then 6 months later, that act can just, it's just amazing. And it's wild. Even when you sign a new artist sometimes, I see this pattern all the time because the artist is looking for a label and they've got their attorney and maybe there's a publisher and then there's an agent. And when all those deals get done, and you can imagine for a young person like that, that's a lot of stuff. It sucks a lot of energy out of them. And the moment all those things get done, for the ones that are really, really the real thing, it's like it's the hockey stick. It just shoots up because finally all that's settled, and then they start writing and performing at a level that you hoped they would get to, but you had no real idea if they would or not. So, but yeah, to answer your question, it was Luke Bryan. That was a big miss. Goodman, right here. You heard it.
Don't let it happen again.
I'm trying.
That's right. This is your second chance right here.
We have the paperwork ready to go. And
did you hear the podcast theme? I know you were impressed.
I was very impressed.
Good stuff.
Randy, thanks for coming by.
It's
man.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Really interesting. Randy Goodman, chairman, which is like a mafia thing.
Yeah, what does that mean?
And CEO.
Don. The man of the chair.
Don.
Sony.
CEO and Don of Sony Music.
Now, see, I wish corporate titles were like that.
Yeah,
Don.
The cleaner.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Bubba, take us out.
All right. Thanks again, Match.com, for helping sponsor the podcast. And remember, finding your very special someone, it's way easy now. Just go ahead and download the Match.com app to your phone. It's awesome. That's where you want your matches anyway, because you're going to be sitting there on the toilet looking through going, oh, yeah, that's the one I want to marry. Get your matches sent directly to your phone. Also, if you're one of our podcast listeners, you can get 7 days for free. All you have to do is sign up match.com/Bubba. Match.com/Bubba.
This was the podcast,
but now it's over.
That's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day.
That was the podcast.
It was fun. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.